When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to More Than Amused Podcast, a podcast all about women and the arts, hosted by Stani and Sadie.
Join us as we explore what it's like being a female artist, examine modern day problems, and educate ourselves and you on important and forgotten female artists of the past.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to More Than Amused. My name is Sadie.
And I'm Stani, and welcome back.
I'm excited. It's a new month, which means today we get to learn about a new artist.
Yes, and this one is really good, but it was infuriating, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, how come?
You know how sometimes we talk about, like, you learn something and then throughout the course of the podcast you find out that whatever you learned was completely false and then you just feel really upset?
Yes.
That was this episode.
Okay, cool. I'm very intrigued then.
I feel like my thoughts on this are a little scattered because there's a lot of emotion too with, like, some of the things I figured out. So hopefully I can rope it all together. But did you ever learn about, like, the first films ever made in school?
I don't really remember.
I know my education was, like, a little weird because I went to an art-based school in junior high, and so they integrated art into everything, and we had a whole class that talked about, like, history of music, history of movies.
That's cool.
Like, that whole thing. Yeah, it was really great. It actually, like, helped a ton with just, like, general knowledge of how everything lines up. I think it's essential for everyone. Like, I wish more schools would do that because I think it's so helpful, especially because we consume that all of the time.
Just gonna say, like, I do feel like, yeah, almost like history of pop culture is becoming more relevant, just period, if you're gonna exist in the world. Like, it's it's helpful for just media literacy, and I think media literacy period is just becoming more and more essential. So
I completely agree.
Cool that that class existed.
Yeah, and I wish it was a thing for everyone, because also like, I think a lot of the times on the internet, if you mention, like, oh, this, and then someone will be like, well, didn't you know that so-and-so did that first? And then you're like, no, like, how was I supposed to know?
I'm not a walking encyclopedia. No, I did not know that.
So a lot of, like, our media literacy, we have to learn on our own, and that kind of sucks. But anyway, so I did have a class, and one of the first movies ever that they talk about is that, like, the movie of the men flying to the moon. And it has, like, a face, and then the rocket, like, crashes into it. It's like that iconic clip.
Oh, okay.
The man on the moon and then the rocket. And then they bring back aliens or something and throw a party. A Trip to the Moon. Le Voyage dans la Lune. It's a 1902 French science fiction adventure film.
1902 is actually earlier in history than I thought it would be. So
movies
that's cool.
Are really old. I think you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. It's only like 13 minutes long. Movies were short, but they were there. But that's largely considered one of the first films ever. And it's a lie.
Because it was actually a woman?
Of course.
Of course. It was always actually a woman. Yep.
I feel like we're going to get to the end of our life and find out that Eve was actually created first. Like, this is, like, so irritating because it continues to happen over and over and over again. And I just can't handle it. And then the other thing I thought of was there was this really incredible commercial going around for a while about the women's soccer league, where this little girl was asking Alexa or, like, Google or something, some virtual assistant, who had scored the most goals in professional soccer history. And it kept saying, like, oh, what's his name? Messi, you know, like, and then they would say, like, okay, what woman in the National Women's Soccer League has scored the most goals? And then it would say someone else, and she had scored more. And then it would be like, wait, then who actually has scored the most goals in soccer history? And it would go back and say Messi again. And so it was talking about the fact that, like,
that's a cool ad. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's really cool. Oh, it said Cristiano Ronaldo
has
scored the most, but he actually hasn't. It's Christine Sinclair. Yes. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like media is biased. And they've even noticed it with like AI that it's starting to show sexism. There's another commercial by an investing company and they asked AI to like generate pictures of people who are good with money, who are investors, yeah. and all of them were men and mostly white men. Mm-hmm. And so it's just saying that like nothing is able to fix itself until like we do. You know what I mean? Like yeah. if we continue to tell these lies about like who actually has the most goals, who did things first, who's actually good at stuff.
Like that actually makes a difference.
It does. Like our media is so biased to the point where like AI is learning our bias and mm-hmm. like
and is now like participating up. And regurgitating yes. that.
So like it's sexist and it shouldn't be because it's a freaking robot.
Yeah.
But it's because we're so sexist and that's what it's learning from. Mm-hmm. So I just think like all of that was running through my mind because I was like, this is what the problem is. Like we continue doing this and then we miss out on people like Alice Guy Blanchet. Okay, so now we'll get into her. So Alice Ida Antoinette Guy Blanchet was a French pioneer filmmaker and was one of the first filmmakers to make a narrative fiction film. I would argue the first, actually. And the first woman ever to direct a film. And from 1896 to 1906, she was the only female filmmaker in the world.
Wow.
So a lot of times she's called the only female filmmaker in the world. I've also seen, like, the greatest film director you've never heard of. Of course.
Of course.
So many other subtitles. Some fun things. She directed a film in color.
Wow.
Yes. Way before Wizard of Oz. Way before
it became mainstream.
Talked about. Yes. Yeah. She had a film in color. She also had a film with sound, which is insane because back then and for a very long time, there was only silent films. The way that they did it, in case I forgot to bring it up later, was they would have the actors lip sync to a previous recording of themselves and it would be like on a loop. So they were short. Obviously, like most of these movies are not the movie. There's no 3-hour film going yeah. on here. They're like 5, if that, minutes to about 10 sometimes.
But they set the precedence for what movies are now.
Another thing that she did is she directed the first film with an all-black cast.
Wow.
If you Google who directed the first film with an all-black cast, it does not bring up her, but she did it. So, and it's worth noting that that film was not about racism. It was about a guy falling in love with a rich woman that he couldn't have. So, love that.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes. She also had a full narratives, special effects, full on casting with extras and everything before any of this was being done. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 26 years, she directed 1,000 films.
Oh my gosh.
Which is like, I think practically triple what Steven Spielberg has done in double the amount of time. Does that make sense? So yeah. Steven Spielberg has like a career of like 46 years or something. Mm-hmm. And she directed like way more films in a shorter amount of time. Obviously his films are longer.
Bigger budget, take longer. Yeah, yeah. But you know, whatever. I think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, just yeah. worth noting that like the amount that she was able to do in the amount of time mm-hmm. that she had is insane. She also was the artistic director and co-founder of a film studio in New York called Solax Studios and became like the center of American filmmaking before Hollywood was established. And she's basically written out of history
yeah.
almost completely. Everyone we talk about, it's getting a little irritating.
Like every woman innovator that we have discussed, which are many because turns out women are actually the innovators in art.
Seriously, it's getting to the point where I'm just like, well, all of history is a lie.
Yeah.
And regardless of what anyone accomplishes, after we die, the men are just going to take us out.
It's really so annoying. Optimistic way of viewing it, but also, you know what? That's how it feels. So yeah, I'm with you.
I think I'm feeling really jaded and I apologize. To everyone.
That's okay.
I know that this is like not everyone, but sometimes when you just read these stories over and over again and then like all these stupid men complaining about the Barbie movie this week and I'm just like, I can't handle this.
You know what? That is so valid. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's just getting a little irritating, but nevertheless.
It's like, oh, you don't like how you were betrayed in media? Aw. Mm-hmm.
Like, what an interesting problem that no one has probably ever had an issue with before.
That's weird. I don't think, no one's ever felt this way.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so Alice's father, Emile G., is an owner of a bookstore and publishing company in Santiago, Chile. And he marries Marie, I'm probably going to say it wrong, Clote, a Franceline Aubert. And then they return to Santiago after getting married in Paris. And in early 1873, they lived in Santiago with the four siblings of Alice. And she was born in July of 1873. So her mother was pregnant with her when there was a devastating smallpox epidemic in Chile. And so they fled. Smallpox was really bad. It killed a lot of people. And they couldn't just tell them to stay home like we did with COVID. They fled back to Paris. And that's where Alice was born. She was raised a little bit French. In her autobiography, she actually said that it was her mother's attempt to make sure her fifth child should be truly French, nice. Which is funny. Her father had to return to Chile soon after her birth, and her mother followed a few months later, entrusting Alice to her grandmother in Switzerland. And then at age 3 or 4, her mother returned and took Alice back to South America. Sounds like a very transient and interesting childhood. I can't imagine like your parents leaving shortly after you were born and then coming back when you're like 4, virtually a stranger. To take True. You to a different country. Yeah, a very wow. different country, especially like going from Switzerland to South America. Like that's mm-hmm. a culture shock and vice versa. You know, like it just crazy. At the age of 6, she was taken back to France by okay. her father to attend the Faithful Companions of Jesus school. And then her and her sister Louise were moved to a convent in Ferney a few years later and then brought back to Paris. It was pretty common at the time, I think, in really religious families to like send your daughters off to a convent for school. I'm pretty sure the nuns ran a lot of the girls' early education for a really long time.
And I'm sure it was probably just one of the only ways to ensure that they were educated.
It's like, send them to a convent. They'll at least learn to, like, read and write.
Yeah.
Her father died in January of 1891 of unknown causes. Hmm. And shortly after, her mother got a job with Nutellite Materna. I don't know exactly what that is. But she was unable to keep that job. And so Alice trained as a typist and stenographer, which is a really new field at the time, to support herself and her mother. And then landed her first typing job at a varnish factory. And then in 1894, she began working at the... basically like a photography studio owned by Felix Max Richard. Anyway, so it was a camera manufacturing and photography supply company. So that's basically all we know about her early childhood. Not a ton, just a lot of traveling back and forth between France and South America. Yeah. Parents that were like kind of there, kind of not, like uh-huh. I don't know. And 4 other siblings that aren't really mentioned a lot. Just kind of one of those things where you wish that people there paid more attention. But we know a lot about her professional life. So, like I said, she was hired to work as a typist or secretary for the camera manufacturing and photography supply company. It was owned by Felix Max Richard at the time. But then, only a year later, due to a court decision, don't know what happened there, but they ended up having the company change hands. And he sold it to 4 men, Gustave Eiffel, Joseph Vallat, Alfred Besnier, and Leon Gamont. So they named the company after Gamont because Eiffel was the subject of a national scandal regarding the Panama Canal. I'm guessing there's a lot of tea going on here if you want to go into
like, the history of this company. This feels like a lot of gossip, but okay.
And then this studio, Gamont, became a major force in the motion picture industry in France. So Alice was working there and then continued to be working there for more than 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And it involved her directing, producing, writing, and overseeing more than 700 films. Worth noting, Gamont published their history like a couple of years ago. No mention of Alice Guy.
Gross.
Yep, left her out. I think they ended up adding her back in after some uproar, which is nice from some people who knew of her. Because she literally was there from the very beginning, like before it was even called Gaumont. She was a part of the company. And so just irritating that they like completely left her out.
Especially when it's like now she is one of the very first filmmakers and that it was like, yes. Oh, we don't need to mention that she was here. When it's like, why wouldn't you want to mention that one of the first filmmakers was like a part of this?
And like 700 films over a career of 25 years. And that was like all mostly at their studio. It's like,
why wouldn't you do that? Yeah.
Yeah. So irritating. She literally like rose through the ranks of the company. Cause like I said, she started as a secretary, but then she became so familiar with all of the different clients, marketing strategies, the stock that they had of cameras. She got to meet with a lot of like pioneering film engineers. She was able to attend a surprise Lumiere event on March 22nd, 1895. And it was the first demonstration of film projection. It was like this obstacle everyone was trying to solve. And so they screened one of their early films, workers leaving the Lumiere factory, which was basically just a scene of workmen leaving the plant in Lyon. And bored with the idea of capturing film only being used for scientific or promotional purpose of selling cameras in the form of demonstration films, she wanted to incorporate fictional storytelling elements. And so she asked Gaumont for permission to make her own film, and he granted it. Guys, cinematography would not exist the way that it does today without this woman. Can you imagine if someone was like, oh, we're only going to use film for demonstration, promotional, or scientific purposes, and no one ever went, maybe we should tell a story.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, I have full faith that eventually someone probably would have said it, but like, she did it first. And that was something that had to be invented and had to be done first. And she was the one who did it. And that's significant.
Yes. And we don't know how long it would have taken. Like,
true.
It seems stupid to be like, oh, like, duh, someone would have thought of that. But
no, it is like one of those things that it seems so obvious now that you forget that it had to be invented, but like it did. Yeah. Someone had to do that first.
Someone had to. And luckily she was like, this is boring.
Yeah. Let's do something
better. Okay. So there's actually, I saw like a very short clip of her very first film. Cool. It's also considered the first narrative film ever because it was the first one. It
actually
was in 1896. And it's in French, but it's called The Fairy of the Cabbages. It's a silent film. It is basically this, like, lady that kind of looks like a fairy, but, like, not how we imagine them now. Just, like, in a pretty dress. And she's standing in a garden surrounded by all these cabbages. And then she picks up babies out of the cabbages and lays them down on the ground like she's harvesting vegetables.
Nice.
Which is funny. There seems to be like multiple different versions of this film too. There was like a debut film, but then there was like 1-2 years later that they found in film archives that was slightly different. But then there was like another one that they believe, but like a lot of it's lost. I was actually watching like a short 5-minute video by like this film bro on YouTube, but like a good one because he brought up how great she was. It's Gamma Ray on YouTube. But he talked about the fact that like if you know anyone, which I don't, who has like films in their attic, or like if you work at an archive library or something, to like look through your records, because there's probably copies of these like early films by her hidden somewhere that like are arguably like lost.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And that's probably so true for so many things that like, you know, we talked about the abandoned house that they found a symphony in. What was the name of?
Oh, Florence Price.
Florence Price, yes. So it's just kind of one of those situations, you know, where like we don't know where stuff is, but like it doesn't mean that it's been destroyed. It could still be there. So I thought that was really cool. And they found versions of it, but like there's parts of it that are still missing. But a newspaper actually described the film as chaste fiction of children born under the cabbages as a wonderfully framed chromo landscape. And then just a few years later, Alice Guy reported in 1912, every moving picture house in the country was turning out stories instead of spectacles and plots instead of paramour. everyone jumped on board with the narrative storytelling for film after this, which, thank heavens. So from 1896 to 1906, Alice Guy was Gaumont's head of production and is generally considered the first filmmaker to systematically develop narrative filmmaking. She also was the only female director in the entire world from 1896 to 1906. Obviously, that's because of sexism. But worth noting, once again, this is an early field with not a lot of structure. And so women were able to sneak their way in, which happens time and time again until it gets more established. And all of a sudden, they don't care about the history of the industry and we get kicked out again.
But we find it over and over again in all these women we've covered that yes. Women are the ones who laid the groundwork for any new medium.
Seriously, I'm like, every mystery of the world, I'm just be like, it was a woman.
At this point.
The pyramids, probably a woman.
Probably women. Like, it wasn't aliens, yeah, guys. It was just women. Yeah.
Arguably just as mysterious to men as aliens.
So true.
So her main contemporaries would be the Lumières and Méliès. Méliès is the one who did the Trip to the Moon French film.
Oh, cool.
And then she also explored a lot of like dance and travel films, often combining the two, like the film Le Bolero, which was performed by Miss Saharit, who's a dancer, and Tango. And then a lot of her films were really popular in music hall attractions, such as the Serpentine Dance films. Does that sound familiar?
It does. Yes. Louis Fuller?
Yes.
It was Louis Fuller. Yes.
Yes. And then we did one this year, too, that was like Louis Fuller.
It was, hold on. It's Louis Fuller and Isadora Duncan. Those are the two dancers, the mothers of modern dance.
Yeah, and looking at her films, it's very, very like the films that Alice Guy was doing. So I don't know if she filmed exactly the ones that Louis Fuller was in, but I mean, they were in Paris. It said she was doing serpentine dance films, same time period.
And I just trust that all those artists, they probably all knew each other. They probably were connected.
Yeah, especially because her films were like in music hall attractions and like, you know, I'm guessing that it was probably her. So I love that that like connects, you know, like here she is filming Louis Fuller.
Who was the, again, innovator of modern dance, who did things in new ways before anyone else did. So love that.
Love it. In 1906, she made a film called The Life of Christ, which was a really big budget production. It actually had 300 extras.
Wow, that is a lot.
Very big. Like probably one of the first large-scale film productions ever. She used the illustrated James Tissot New Testament as reference material for the film, which featured 25 episodes and was her largest production at Gaumont to date. In addition to this, she was one of the pioneers in the use of audio recordings in conjunction with images on screen, which I kind of explained. They like synchronize the film to a pre-recorded lip syncing of the actor. It worked, I think, for the most part with singing really well.
That makes sense.
Because they could sing and then it's easier to match up lip syncing of singing than talking. Because there's less nuances in how your mouth moves. And they were obviously really short. Like, I think most of them looped. So it was like a minute or two of like music and it would loop with them singing. I don't think cameras could record sound at this time, which I think is why a lot of the films
they
were
had
silent.
To do it this
way. So that was the only way they could do it. She also was, of course, one of the first to employ special effects, including using double exposure, masking techniques, and running a film backward.
Cool. Yes. So rewind is thanks to her.
Yep. And then she also, I think I mentioned a little earlier, she did some films in color. The way that they had to do that was coloring on the frames after, I think, because once again, they couldn't capture. But it's worth noting that Louis Fuller's 1905 silent short film was also in color, but only her dress. And so I think it's that same technique.
Oh, yeah. They just like drew it afterwards.
Okay. So during her tenure at Gaumont, she hired and trained Louis Follide and Etienne Arnold as writers and directors and hired the set designer Henri Menessier and art director Ben Carr. So very, very fundamental to the beginning of this studio. Really stupid that they wrote her out of their history.
You know, I was going to say, like, the more you're telling me about this, it's like, oh, like, that was truly horrible that she was not included.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like they casually forgot to miss the secretary. Oops, mistake. Like, she was crucial to the building up of this company's success.
Yes, 1,000%. Like, literally, narrative storytelling, special effects, color, sound, double exposure, and masking techniques. Like, there's so much that is just, like, idiotic.
Yes.
Like, oh, man. Okay. So, in 1907, she married Herbert Blanchet, who was appointed the production manager for Gaumont's operations in the United States. Of course, everyone was trying to get out there. So after working with her husband for Gaumont in the United States, they struck out on their own only 3 years later and partnered with George A. Maggie in the formation of the Solax Company, which was the largest pre-Hollywood studio in America. Let me say it again. The largest pre-Hollywood studio in America.
Yes.
That's a really big deal. So they start this new film studio in Flushing, New York. And her husband served as production manager and cinematographer, and she worked as the artistic director, directing many of the releases. Mm. And within 2 years, they had become so successful that they invested more than $100,000 into new and technologically advanced production facilities in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Wow.
$100,000 in 1910.
That's a very important distinction. Yes.
I think it's $3 million.
Yeah, that sounds right. I would, that seems
over $3 million. That's a lot of money. Many early film studios were actually based in Fort Lee at the beginning of the 20th century. I don't know why. That seems like a really random place to me.
Yeah.
But that's where they put them. This also made her, of course, the first woman to own her own studio and studio plant.
Cool.
And her directing style was also unique because she really focused on acting that was natural. She had, like, a large sign in her studio that read, "Be Natural." I think it was even the subtitle of the company for a while, Solax Studios. This is way before method acting, anything like that. Like,
acting in movies was so new that, I mean, obviously there was acting in plays, and acting has been around forever, but, like,
but they're so different. Like, even now, they talk about having Broadway stars come on and do movies, and they don't know how to act towards a camera, because it's so different. Like,
so different.
Instead of everything being big and grand so it can be seen clear from the back of the audience, it has to be, like, these small, tiny nuances. So her being able to tell people, like, be natural is helping them realize, like, how you need to act in front of a camera in order for a camera to grab it.
Yeah.
So very, very fundamental to the beginning of film. In 1913, she directed The Thief, which was the first script sold by future Wonder Woman creator William Moulton Marston.
Cool.
A few years later, her and her husband would actually divorce, and Hollywood was becoming a thing. With the rise of cost-effective climate in Hollywood. It is cost-effective in Hollywood to film. That's why everyone's there, because the weather is good year-round. So,
which is almost funny that that's why.
I know, right?
Like, oh, I guess it really does just come back to practicality a lot of the time.
Yep. Like, Hollywood exists because California had a good climate. And the land was really cheap because everyone was out east.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yep. But this divorce is kind of another reason why she was taken out of a lot of things, because their film partnership ended with her marriage ending. And then that led to some problems being able to continue on in the film industry, of course. Like, I'm getting very jaded. This is supposed to be motivational, you guys. But it's just like, this is so stupid.
Yeah.
I feel like I get more and more upset every time, because I just feel like our entire history is a lie. Frustrating. Anyway, I love this quote by her. It said, "There is nothing connected with the staging of a motion picture that a woman cannot do as easily as a man. There is no reason she cannot master every technicality of the art In the arts of acting, painting, music, and literature, women have long held their place among the most successful workers. And when it's considered how vitally these arts enter into the production of motion pictures, one wonders why the names of scores of women are not found among the most successful creators of photodrama offerings.
You know, it's like when you word it that way, it just like seems so obvious, you know?
Right.
But it is sad that maybe it's not obvious because it had to be something that even had to be said in the first place, which is sad.
Yes. And I think the thing that like got to me the most was like there's nothing connected to the staging of a motion picture that a woman cannot do as easily as a man. And then it's like, well, duh, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I guess you could argue scientifically with testosterone that men are stronger sometimes, not in every case, physically stronger. Mm-hmm. And so you could say like, okay, women can't
power lift.
Yeah. They're like, okay, fine. Like if you wanted to do that, you could. Holding a camera, painting a picture. What
being
about
artistic,
that? Like, what makes a man genetically superior in those areas than a woman? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason why that should even be a question. So it's just strange. We both have brains. That's all it takes for that activity.
Just like basic creativity, you know?
Yeah. In the late 1940s, she actually wrote an autobiography, and it was published in France and then in translated to English a decade later with the help of her daughter, Simone, her daughter-in-law, Roberta, and the film writer, Anthony Slide. I don't think it's in print anymore.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Unfortunately, when we cover these people that are really old, like, at this point, their autobiographies have gone out of print.
It was there, though. She wrote it. Her daughter actually did a ton of work in helping bring her back into the attention of the world.
I love that.
Yeah. Her daughter, like, really, really championed her. And it sounds like her daughter-in-law as well, which is amazing. And a lot of the times it does come down to family members.
And other women family members a lot of the time, too.
I know. Worth noting that it was not her daughter and her son. It was her daughter and her daughter-in-law.
Which, like, I don't know the story behind her son. Who knows? But it just seems that the other women work to champion forgotten women most of the time.
And then also, like, Alice Guy herself was tremendously concerned with her unexplained absence from historical record of the film industry. Which, true, that would be frustrating. Mm-hmm. She constantly communicated with colleagues and film historians, correcting previously made and supposedly factual statements about her life. She crafted lengthy lists of her films as she remembered them, which, I mean, that would be hard because, once again, she did 1,000 in 20 years. I've never created 1,000 anything in that short
time. Like, that's what, like, in my life, I've done probably a couple hundred songs, and even then, I'm like, I don't remember every song I've written. There's no way.
Exactly. Like, I went to a Kelsey Ballerini concert and someone asked for a song and she couldn't remember the words.
Yeah.
And someone was like, wow, how would that even happen? It's like, do you know any songs she's probably written? Like,
so many.
You get to a certain point where you don't remember all of it. Like, that would be weird. But so she's like sitting there writing lists of all of her films, hoping to like get creative ownership and legitimate credit for them. So there's probably a ton of films out there by her that she doesn't even have credit for, which makes me like more inclined to believe that the Louis Filler films were done by her, because I don't think there's a director listed. She actually was the subject of a National Film Board of Canada documentary, The Last Garden, The Life and Cinema of Alice Guy O'Shea, which won an award for best documentary.
That's cool.
And then in 2002, there was another one, Alice Guy Blanchet, Lost Visionary of the Cinema.
I'm just so tired of being the lost heroes, you know?
Right. I know, it almost gets irritating when it's like, the greatest film director you've never heard of. And it's
the
like,
lost genius. Like, why is she lost in the first place? Especially when she herself was fighting so hard. Like, this isn't the story of a passive woman who was not fighting for her right to be taken seriously. Like, she knew she was the innovator. She knew she was behind this and had to watch and listen as people were writing her out.
Exactly. So it's just stupid. It's stupid. Like, yeah. That is the truth. It's just stupid. It's complete idiocy that wrote her out of history and frustrating. So, yeah, her career from like 1896 to 1920, she directed over 1,000 films. About 150 of them survive, and 22 of them were feature-length films.
Wow.
That's
a lot.
Insane. She was one of the only and early woman, along with Louis Weber, to manage and own her own studio. Obviously, very few of her films survive. In 2018, Kino Lorber released a 6-disc box called Pioneers First Woman Filmmakers in cooperation with the Library of Congress. And the first disc of the set is devoted to films of Alice Guy. So there are some that have been there. Another documentary, Be Natural, The Untold Story of Alice Guy Blanche, directed by Pamela Green and narrated by Jodie Foster, opened at the Cames Film Festival in 2018. So there's been quite a few documentaries.
That's cool.
Because of that specific one in 2018, they actually were able to restore and preserve a lot of her films. And there was a pillar in her name that was featured at the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures. So, like, some recognition. What I find hilarious, in September of 2019, she was included in the New York Times series Overlooked No More, which is a claim that I don't think you can make.
That is an optimistic way of wording it, I dare say. Yeah.
And apparently, reported by Deadline in 2021, Pamela B. Green is developing a feature biopic about Alice Guy Blanche.
Oh, that's cool.
That could be cool. However, we have reported on like a million biopics that are in development. And, you know, it takes a lot. Yet. So who knows? Something worth noting. Guy Blanche was an early influence on Alfred Hitchcock.
Ooh.
And Sergei Einstein. Hitchcock remarked, "I'd be over the moon with the Frenchman Georges Méliès. I was thrilled by the movies of D.W. Griffin and the early French director Alice Guy."
Wow. And Hitchcock is someone that is not an unsung hero. No. So
the fact that I don't even have to say his first name.
Yeah, that's a very good indicator that you have made your mark on history.
Yeah, I feel like that's the best indicator that you can use. If I can say someone's last name, DiCaprio, and you know who I'm talking about,
they've made their mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In his memoirs, Sergei Eisenstein. He's another filmmaker. He described an unnamed film he had seen as a child that continued to be very important to him. The film was identified as Alice Guy Blanche's The Consequences of Feminism, 1906, during the making of the documentary Be Natural, The Untold Story of Alice Guy Blanche.
Interesting.
Yes. So that's another thing. She was heavily involved in women's suffrage, fighting for racial equality, obviously with like directing the first all black cast film.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, like a lot of her films were able to touch on that regardless of the fact that they were still so early. Personal life. Okay, so this is just short little things. I probably should have roped it in earlier, but that's okay. So when she got married, she had to resign from her position working with Gaumont. I don't know if that was like a rule back then or something, or if...
Yeah, part of me is like, but why?
I don't get it. So then her and her husband were sent to Cleveland to facilitate, and then, of course, separated from the company to start their own studio. Okay. She gave birth to her daughter Simone in September of 1908, and then they created Solax, making her the first woman to run her own studio. And then in 1912, when she was pregnant with her second child, that's when they built the studio in Fort Lee, New Jersey, and continued to complete 1 to 3 films a week, setting unrealistic expectations for women everywhere. But that's okay. It's awesome.
We can forgive her for that.
Yeah. So cool. On June 27th of 1912, her son was born. And then shortly after taking the position of feature production and executive direction, her husband started a film company called Blanche Features, Inc. They maintained a personal and business partnership for the next few years, working on many projects. But then in 1918, with the development of Hollywood, he left his wife and children to pursue his career.
Boo.
So it sounds like he just kind of ran away from the family for, you know, the glitz and glam of Hollywood.
Another just side note where it's like women have to pay the price for like men's transgressions. And
of course.
Where she's willing to be the correct one and not abandon her family. And yet now she's having to suffer the consequences and also is the lesser known, maybe not lesser known out of the two, but, you know, didn't get her chance to work towards her Hollywood dreams that, you know, yeah. I don't know.
No, it's frustrating. In October of 1918, she actually almost died from the Spanish flu pandemic.
Oh,
too many pandemics, guys.
Yes.
In history, in recent history.
Period.
Yeah. This was while she was filming her final film, Tarnished Reputations. She recovered and then following her illness, joined her husband for a short while in Hollywood, but they lived separately. She did work as his directing assistant on two of his films starring Alla Nazimova. And then she directed her last film in 1919. And then in 1921, she was forced to auction her film studio and other possessions in bankruptcy. And they were officially divorced a year later. And she returned to France in 1922. But by then, the climate of filmmaking had changed a lot. And they didn't welcome her back in. So she never made another film.
Ah.
Yeah. She never remarried and in 1964 returned to the United States to live in Wayne, New Jersey with her oldest child, her daughter Simone. Mm-hmm. And on the 24th of March, 1968, at age 94, hope I live that long. That's insane. Alice Guy Blanchet died in a nursing home in New Jersey and was buried at Mary Rest Cemetery.
Wow.
Yes. So, right before her death, due to a lot of efforts by her daughter, she was actually awarded the Legion of Honor, which is the highest non-military award France offers.
Oh, cool.
And then a few... Oh, yeah, like, around the same time, she was also honored by a cinematic company, a French cinema ceremony.
Cool.
That went unnoticed by the press.
Didn't even
get reported. There's been some, like, accolades and tributes. I talked about some of the documentaries that have been about her. Mm-hmm. There was, like, a musical about the invention of cinema produced by Laura Comstock.
Oh, cool.
Called Bag Punching Dog. And she was the, Alice Guy was the lead character of the musical.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned a lot of that. There was a commission that raised funds to replace her grave marker in New Jersey that included the Solax logo and noting her role as a cinema pioneer. There's been some preservation of her films later on as they find records of them. They're able to, like, bring them in, fix them up.
Yeah.
After her death, she was awarded the Special Directorial Award for Lifetime Achievement. Worth noting that the Fort Lee Film Commission actually had to lobby the Directors Guild of America to accept her as a member.
Ew.
Yeah, and then she was awarded, and then she also was inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame. I love it when hometowns fight for the people that came from them.
Me too.
Like, she wasn't even born in New Jersey, but, like, she died there and, like, had her studio there, and they recognize her in a lot of ways, which is nice. There was a film journalist, Veronica Labrie, who founded the Alice Guy Prize, who grants yearly awards to Women Filmmakers of the Year.
Oh,
which
cool.
is great. I love that that's in her name.
Mm-hmm.
And there is so much more. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I could go on forever. There's, like, little things here and there. Like, Yale University has a state-of-the-art screening room named Alice Cinema after Alice Guy. Like, there's tiny little nods
everywhere. But she's, not in public common consciousness.
Yes. Like, when people talk about the greatest film directors of all time, like, her name doesn't come up.
They're not mentioning who was actually the very first, which was her.
Yes. And, like, in order to find her, this is what always irritates me. I always have to add female or woman to everything in order to find these people. So I'm like, who were the first film directors? And it brings up a list of men. And then if you type in who were the first female film directors,
you get a whole new actual list of people.
Yeah. And it's just frustrating. It goes back to, like, that media bias that we talked about at the time where it's like, it just never seems to be completely solved.
Yeah. It's just there.
Yeah. The video I mentioned on YouTube by that one guy, he actually brought up a quote from Tina Fey, who obviously is a woman film director.
Yeah.
And she talked about the fact that, like, when you have diverse voices creating art, when the panel of judges is there, if they aren't also diverse, they don't get it. And so a lot of the times they'll write things off. And I thought about that a lot, that, like, if you make a film about, you know, an experience of a woman in America, and then the review board is a bunch of men who have never thought about that,
they're not going to get it.
They won't get it. So then they don't give awards and accolades to these films. And I think it continues to happen. Like, everyone's basically already called that Barbie will probably get, like, little to no recognition at the Oscars, regardless of the fact that, in my full opinion, like, and this is my opinion, but based on, like, reviews I've seen and everything else, I think it's arguably a better film than Oppenheimer is.
Yeah, I feel like other people would make that claim too. No, yeah. That's what I was going to say. I feel like that is actually so, like, topically just relevant right now, where it's like, yeah, if, like, so many people, it's like, well, I didn't get it. It's like, cool, well, that movie wasn't for you then.
Yeah.
And if you didn't get Barbie, that's fine. But, like, what Barbie was about was, like, how women feel. Like, and it's just funny, like, seeing all that criticism is of just, like, step outside yourself and realize that maybe the art isn't made for you for a second, you know?
And that's okay, because there's millions of years of art that's made for you. Yeah, so it's just kind of, I thought that was a really important point, and realizing that until, you know, like, boards of critics are more diverse, the, like, ratings and reviews and awards and accolades for all of these films can't follow suit, because they won't understand. And it's the same for, like, racist, you know.
Yeah.
Like, repercussions and everything. For any, like,
minority.
Like, yeah. Like, you make a movie about the Black experience in America, and if it's a board of white people, they aren't going to get it. Like, they won't understand. Or
it's kind of like, I saw a TikTok about this, truthfully, like, in response to kind of, like, talking about a lot of criticism, where they brought up the movie Hidden Figures, where it's like, a lot of the times movies like that, they have to create some white sympathetic character who, like, did do the right thing, so it can appeal to white audiences, so that they can, like, see themselves in the movie and say, like, oh my gosh, well, that would have been me, I would have been that person, when in reality, like, that character that they created, that character didn't actually even exist. And so it kind of rewrites history in the way that it's like, well, that's awesome that, like, you think that would have been you in that situation, but unfortunately that person isn't real. And so, and in those type of movies, like, that happens a lot, because you know, that's who is gonna go see the movies.
So it's not just, like, an Alice Guy problem, it's obviously a historical issue. But yeah, so that's her, like,
amazing.
Yeah, I really hope that more continues to come out. I hope we get a biopic. I hope it does well. But at least, like, all of you now know that when someone's like, oh,
who was some of the first directors? Let me tell you who it was.
Alice Guy. When they say, what was the first film with an all-Black cast? And say it was directed by Alice Guy.
Which same with
one of the first films with special effects, fully feature films. So much, you guys. Like,
basically, who was the main innovator here behind film? Her.
Literally, the first person who went, maybe we should tell a story.
Which is, I would dare say, the most critical part to the entire creating of the film industry.
I agree.
Amazing. So,
and it always bothers me. Like, even the Wikipedia thing says one of the first filmmakers to make a narrative fiction film. Mm-mm. The first.
Yeah.
So... yeah, but that's her.
Amazing. Well, thank you for teaching me about her, and now I know. Now I know that because of a woman, we watch movies now the way that we do today. I will trust that the chain reaction happened just because of her, and I fully believe that. So also, amazing.
Fun little added note, her daughter would go on to be a film actress. So I just love. Oh, cool. It all trickles down.
Definitely.
And I know we've been talking a lot about film this summer. It is the summer of movies. What can we say?
I have never in my life been so aware of, like, just movies period than this summer.
I don't think I've ever paid that much attention. Like box office numbers, budgets, nothing. I've never, never cared.
I was actually thinking about that. I was like scrolling TikTok this afternoon and I was realizing that most of my For You page right now is just like people analyzing movies and talking about movies, and not even just Barbie and Oppenheimer, just now it's just movies period. Yes.
Well, that's the topic of conversation. So I feel like this is a very valid additional note to that.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking about it again next week.
Yeah, I'm like, and spoiler, it will come back next week. But, you know, it, if it's relevant, I want to talk about it.
Yeah, and, like, it's worth noting, you guys are listening to our Barbie episodes a lot. It's what, you know, it's what everyone's talking about.
It's what everyone wants to talk about. And so we're going to, we'll join in on the conversation, too.
Yes, but then I promise we have fun stuff planned for the rest of the year.
True.
You know, that'll all tie it together again. So
definitely.
Yeah. But amazing. That is Alice Guy Blanchet.
Thanks for being here. Leave a rating and review and follow us on Instagram, which is morethanamuse.podcast, and check out all of our content. And that's all.
See you next time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.